11. When Philip and Jimmy emerged from the stone aperture carrying Obon, the mechanical canary, Tyler and Gary were deep in conversation. They had their backs turned and were holding the levers forward by leaning back on them. Tyler said,
I give you that Kirk was more entertaining on his own to watch, but that's because he made more mistakes. When I said that Picard was a better captain, I meant that I'd rather serve on a ship under his command because he was a better leader.
Gary shook his head.
Okay, Tyler. I just meant that Captain Kirk was better because he was more fun to watch. Because that's all that matters. He's a fictional character. You're talking like you think he and Picard are real people. And that's kind of scary.
Gary, I've heard you say some ridiculous, dishonest things,
Tyler moaned.
But I never thought you'd stoop to that. I say Picard's the better captain, you disagree. And when I prove logically that I'm right, you act like I'm crazy to try to shame me into dropping it. Pathetic.
Whatever you say, Tyler.
Oh, that's even worse. Pretending to humor me because I'm irrational instead of just admitting you're wrong?
Okay, Tyler. If you say so.
Okay, Tyler said. Now you're starting to piss me off.
Philip cleared his throat and said,
guys, sorry to interrupt.
Gary turned, looking relieved.
Don't be. Is that the canary?
Tyler said,
hey, this isn't over.
Gary rolled his eyes.
Okay, Tyler, that's fine. Whatever you say.
Tyler pointed at Gary and started to say something, but Jimmy interrupted.
We'd better get going. We want to be long gone before the sun comes up and someone finds out that Philip killed the king. Philip killed the king?
Gary asked. Philip said,
yeah, I'd rather not talk about it.
Don't be silly, Jimmy said. It's all right. You should tell them all about it later. They'd probably think it was pretty cool. But now we really should get out of here.
They went up the steps to the window through which they'd come in. They might have been able to go out the front door and sneak away behind the soldiers' backs, but none of them liked the idea enough to even bring it up. When they got outside, the night was crisp and quiet, save for the rushing of the water below. Surprisingly, the task of climbing down the buttresses was far more challenging than climbing up had been, partly because they were leading with their clumsy feet rather than their relatively dexterous hands, and partly because the act of descending forced them to look down, which constantly reminded them how much danger they were in. Once they were back on the ground, they immediately left it again, leaping from rock to rock, crossing the river back the way they'd come. Again, it seemed much more difficult this time, since the slight downhill slant the rocks had on the way to the castle was now an uphill slog, making all of the jumps more difficult. Also, the rocks seemed substantially less stable this time. They rocked more alarmingly as Gary, Jimmy, carrying Obon's cage, and Philip leapt one after the other, so that at any given time each of them had a rock to themselves. Tyler went last, and by the time he reached the first rock, it was shaking constantly and felt like it could let go at any second.
Guys!
He shouted.
I hate to rush you, but I kinda need you to move faster.
The others looked back, and seeing how much the boulder was trembling, they did indeed hurry up. Philip had barely vacated a stone when Tyler leapt for it. To everyone's horror, the boulder on which Tyler had been standing broke loose and swept away the instant his foot left it. Tyler landed on all fours on the next boulder, which seemed to have been loosened by the others passing. It was shuddering even more alarmingly than the first boulder. Gary nearly screamed,
Don't worry, Ty! We'll get you out of this!
Tyler scowled over his shoulder at the empty space where he had been standing. His thoughts went back to the first day of the quest and the crumbling rock bridge, and he calmed way down. He muttered,
Oh, man! Then yelled, Don't worry about it!
But the others were already hastily scrambling from rock to rock to get him out of his predicament faster. When the next stone was vacant, Tyler made the leap, more in an effort to keep up than out of any sense of self-preservation. He threw himself into the gap between the rocks. The river raged beneath him, and the stone that had just been supporting his weight fell away with the current and was gone before he landed. Philip watched the whole thing and saw that the boulder that was now Tyler's only support was also rocking dangerously. Philip turned to Jimmy and Gary, shouting, "Move! Move! We gotta go! He can't hold on much longer!" Tyler yelled, "No, guys, hold up! Be careful!" He watched miserably as they did neither of those things. Jimmy, already off balance, carrying the large metal birdcage, misjudged a leap and barely made his landing. He teetered sickeningly on one foot, swinging his free leg and arm. Oban clanked and fluttered on his perch as Jimmy swung the cage out over the river, trying desperately to alter his center of gravity. Jimmy finally regained his balance and immediately fell into a crouch. Ahead of him, Gary was scrambling like a gecko, hurling himself to the next rock with abandon. He landed on all fours and nearly slid forward off the far side of the rock. Jimmy had only just regained his footing, but he leapt to the next rock without taking any time to judge the distance. Philip followed suit, landing hard on his stomach when his shoes lost traction on the wet stone. Tyler shouted, "Guys, slow down! You're gonna kill yourselves! I'm not in any more danger than you are!" He could see that it was useless. Philip was now two boulders ahead and had scarcely heard him. Jimmy and Gary were too far away to hear a thing, especially since Gary had already jumped another gap and was nearly to the far bank of the river. Tyler took his time, mentally measuring the distance to the next rock and gathering his strength before committing to the jump. When he landed on the now shaking boulder, he looked back and saw that the boulder from which he had just leapt was gone, traveling downriver at great speed. Tyler looked ahead. Gary was on solid ground now, and even in the dark, at this distance, Tyler could see from Gary's body language that he was deeply concerned. As Tyler watched, Jimmy made the final leap to the relative safety of the riverbank, with a quick helping hand from Gary. Philip threw himself onto the last stone, then forward to the waiting hands of Gary and Jimmy in one fluid movement. They all looked back at Tyler, who was standing five boulders back from them, looking nonchalant. They were all yelling, but Tyler couldn't hear a word over the thunderous roar of the rapids. From their arm motions and general demeanor, he suspected that they were beckoning him to keep trying, to come to them, to not give up. He couldn't help but smile. He knew that they would not be able to hear him, no matter how loud he yelled. So the only way he could communicate was through body language and actions. Tyler stood tall. He moved slowly and deliberately. He stepped to the front of the boulder, taking care to maintain his balance as the rock shook beneath his feet. As gracefully as he could, he jumped to the next rock. He could tell from the terror on the others' faces that the boulder behind him was no longer there. Without looking back, he took his time, judged his distances carefully, and casually jumped to the next rock. The others on the riverbank seemed apoplectic. His attempt to calm them by remaining calm himself clearly was not working. "Oh well," he thought, "I'll keep at it. Maybe they'll get the hint. And if they don't, it'll be fun to watch them freak out." Tyler had two more jumps until dry land. He stood stock still, watching the others, still yelling themselves hoarse, trying to encourage him forward. Tyler attempted to make eye contact with each of them, no mean feat in the low light. Then he pointed at the unsteady boulder on which he was standing. He took a deep breath, then made the next leap. Without looking behind him, he flourished with his hands to show that he knew that it had washed away once he had moved on. Then he shrugged. Both Philip and Jimmy stopped yelling. They looked at each other, then back to Tyler. Gary was still freaking out, but that didn't surprise Tyler. It wasn't that Gary wasn't smart. His brain was as good as anyone's. He just chose to use it sparingly. Tyler made the next jump. One more and he'd be on the riverbank. Also, he was now within yelling distance of the others. "Come on!" Gary yelled. "Before the rock gives way!" Tyler yelled back, "It's not going to!
I can stand here for a year, and the rock wouldn't budge.
Tyler made the final jump to the riverbank, then shouted,
Todd, that ignoramus, wanted us to hurry and risk our necks. But again, he was too lazy, or too stupid. Or maybe he was lazy and stupid, but anyway, he didn't want to go to the trouble of timing things out and seeing how long we'd take to get across on our own. So instead of making the rocks wash away at a set interval, he just made them go whenever the last of us left them. That way, we panic and hurry without him having to bother to actually put in any effort. Isn't that right, Todd?
There was no visual sign of Todd's presence, but they heard a microphone click on, and Todd's voice said,
Yeah, well, it worked for 3 out of 4 of you, didn't it?
They heard the microphone click off again. They looked at the river. The boulders were gone, leaving nothing but a fast-moving torrent of liquid death. Jimmy said,
The entire path across the river is gone.
Philip said,
I guess it's a good thing we don't need to get back in there.
They clambered up the steep slope to the path that would lead them back away from the castle. They worked their way around the far canyon wall, the way they'd come in. By the time morning broke, they were making their way out of the canyon, carrying Oban in his cage, stopping only to fight off pairs of wolves wherever they had killed a single wolf on the way in. They were dead tired. None of them had slept much since they'd left the mine, but they kept moving. There were wolves to contend with, and the paranoid suspicion that the small army they'd left at the castle might be following them. Just before nightfall, they finally dragged themselves into the cursed mines of Mortloch. The miners parted reverently as they approached, holding Oban's cage. The little mechanical canary was fluttering and singing with glee to see its home again. They walked back into the dark interior of the mine, past the miners to Blandoch, the head of the mining guild. Blandoch's face was a picture of delight. Tears of joy filled his eyes as he took Oban's cage from Philip's hands and placed it back on the stone plinth where it clearly belonged. Oban seemed to fly a loop-the-loop in his cage. A mighty cheer rose up from the miners. It all would have been quite moving if they hadn't known that it was part of an elaborate death trap designed by a murderous idiot. Blandoch looked as if his heart might burst, watching Oban tweet and flutter on his perch. After a long, blissful moment, he turned back to the wizards.
You've lived up to your part of the bargain. You've returned our beloved friend Oban to his rightful home. And now that he is back?
Blandoch turned to the miners and spread his arms wide, raising his voice.
We miners can mine again!
A raucous cheer went up from the miners and echoed deafeningly off the stone walls. When the cheer had died, Blandoch turned back to the wizards and said,
Now, it is time for us to fulfill our half of the bargain. You came looking for Dailuine, did you not?
Philip said,
We did.
Blandoch said,
And you will have it.
He leaned down to pick up his golden pickaxe in one hand and removed a lantern from its spike, holding it aloft with his other hand.
Now that Oban is back, he said, I can go mine it for you.
Blandoch walked toward the mine entrance at the rear of the chamber. Gary asked,
Aren't you going to take the bird?
Jimmy said,
Don't sweat it. No, wait, Gary said. The whole point of having a canary in a mine is to take it with you to tell you if the air is bad. I'm sure he knows what he's doing, Jimmy said. No, Gary replied. I don't think he does. Or maybe Todd doesn't.
Blandoch reached the mine entrance. He paused for a moment before stepping into the darkened shaft. He held his lantern forward, then took a single step into the mine. He looked at the ceiling and walls of the mine, clearly looking for something. His eyes came to rest on a round rock, about the size of a bowling ball. It was a dull gray color that did not match the cave walls, and was one of several such rocks that littered the wall of the mine. Gary said, "No." Blandoch said,
"Ah, let's see here."
He sat down his lantern and swung his pickaxe once, lightly tapping the rock, making a little sound and no discernible difference whatsoever. Blandoch leaned his pickaxe against the wall and lifted the Dailawine with both hands.
"What?"
"But," Gary sputtered.
"I told you all that that was the stuff, and you didn't listen!"
Tyler, Philip, and Jimmy watched Blandoch go about his work in silence.
"And none of you are listening now, either," Gary said. "I'm sorry, Gary," Philip said. "But are you saying something?"
Gary said,
"Yes, I was saying..."
Philip held up one finger.
"Hold on a sec, Gary. I think Blandoch's about to say something."
Blandoch approached, carrying the lumpy sphere of Dailawine with great effort, despite his beefy miner's arms. He held it up for the wizards to see.
"Gentlemen, you have done us a great service this day, and it is our honor to present you with this Dailawine."
"Which we could have just taken,"
Gary cried.
"What do you mean?"
Tyler asked. Gary said,
"Last time we were here, getting fed all that mumbo-jumbo about castles and canaries."
"Oh,"
Tyler said.
"That sounds like a tabletop role-playing game, castles and canaries."
"Marketed toward little girls," Jimmy said.
Philip added,
"Or parents who are trying to keep violent games away from their kids. Do parents still do that in your time, Tyler?"
"A few," Tyler said, "but most of them gave up when Nerf started making guns."
"Shut up!"
Gary shouted.
"I told you all! That was the rock we wanted!"
Tyler said,
"Geez, sorry, Gary. We just tend to tune you out sometimes, because so much of what you say is nonsense."
Gary said,
"Was that meant to be an apology? You should listen to me.
Sometimes I'm right. Like when I pointed right at that rock and told you all that it was the rock we needed.
I even picked it up."
"Oh, good," Philip said. "Then you should be able to carry it."